All right, and welcome everyone to the second general session of the California Council of the Blind's Navigating the Future Together virtual conference and convention. Gosh, that was a mouthful. I am Sarah Harris, First Vice President, and I will be your presiding officer for this session, which I'm super excited about. We have a lot of great things going on. I wanted to start off by reminding everybody about our exhibitors, our virtual exhibit hall. So don't forget to go visit our folks over there. That's been sent out. And if you need that, you can always email convention@convention.ccv@gmail.com. And because I get to do this, I'm going to go ahead, because she just joined, and asked Miss Lisa Presley Thomas, our treasurer, to go ahead and pull a door prize. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Woohoo!
I haven't given away any money all day, so I'm excited.
Yay! We love to give away money.
So let's start off with doing $25 Amazon gift card given by IDC.
All right. Thank you, IDC.
And the winner is David Mandel.
All right, David.
I know that guy.
Yeah. So do I.
Heard of him a time
ago. Right? Congratulations, David. And thank you, Lisa. We'll be bringing you back around here pretty soon. And so this afternoon, we have a lot of great things going on, really sticking with our theme of navigating the future. We're going to be joined by Andy Imperato with Disability Rights California, Joe Xavier, the Director of Department of Rehab. We have a surprise after that. And then we are also going to be joined by Ron Brooks, who's going to have a conversation with us about our favorite topic, you know, transportation. We all love to talk about transportation. And so I want to go ahead and hand over to our host for this afternoon, Andrea, to give us some directions about hand raising and such for when we get to that point.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to session number 2, I believe. Is this the second session?
Yes, this is numero dos.
Okay, this official second session of the California Council of the Blind 2022 convention. And here are your instructions for hand raising and unmuting. And remember that all of these are toggles. So if you hit them once, they will unmute or mute. And if you do them again, they will take the opposite action. To unmute on the PC, Alt A. On the Mac, Command Shift A. On your smartphone, it is at the bottom left of your screen. And on your landline telephone, we have a couple of those folks. It is star 6. To raise your hand on the PC, Alt Y, as in, yes, I want to talk. And on the Mac, it's Option Y. On the phone, it is star 9. And on your smartphone, it is at the bottom, or it is at the middle bottom of your screen. You should have a raise hand button, unless you are a panelist. And I'm going to share this because I didn't know until this morning, everybody else probably does, that it is under the More tab if you are a panelist. It's the last option under the More tab. Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, thank you, Andrea. And because we're just so generous and we want to not have Andrea have a hard time with hosting today, if you are on the panelist side and you do have a question, just find a polite time to pop in and say, hi, it's so-and-so. Maybe Alice has a question. Alice can go, hi, it's Alice. Can I ask? And we'll gladly let you do that because I think that'll be a little easier. So we'll go forth and conquer that. All right, folks. So it is absolutely my pleasure to introduce Mr. Andy Imperato, who is the Executive Director with Disability Rights California. And what's so interesting about Andy that I found when I was reading his bio, which I sent out so everybody can check it out, is the fact that he took over as ED at DRC right before the pandemic. And I know a couple other executive directors that had that happen to them. And I'm sure that's been an interesting journey for you. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it on over to Andy and go for it. It's all yours.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And this is a relatively small group, so I'm hoping that we'll have plenty of time for a Q&A, but I really appreciate this opportunity to be with you all. Sarah, you're right that I started at Disability Rights California in February of 2020, so I had 1 month in our Sacramento office, and I actually got down and visited the LA office before everything shut down. But I don't know if your audience knows that I'm here in large part because of a leader in the California Council of the Blind who was the chair of the board and then the president of the board of Disability Rights California when they hired me and when I first started in the job. Jeff Tom was on the committee that hired me. He's somebody that I actually knew when I was in Washington. I spent 26 years in DC before coming back to my home state in February of 2020. So Jeff hired me and then he became the president of our board in March of 2020. So my first 2 years in the job, Jeff was the board president. And then this last March, he became the immediate past president. And Sandra Smith, from Sacramento, who's a parent leader from the intellectual and developmental disability community, is our new board president. And I think you all know Ralph Black, another leader in the blindness community, is the chair of our legislative committee. So you are definitely well represented on our board and helping to drive a lot of our policy advocacy agenda at Disability Rights California. So just to fill in a little bit of my background, Sarah, I graduated law school. I went to law school at Stanford in Northern California, and I graduated in May of 1990. And the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law by President Bush in July of that year. And that was also the year when I had my first serious episode of depression and ended up getting diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So I kind of had a new onset disability as an adult, as a young lawyer, and I had a civil rights law to protect me in the workplace that happened right after I graduated. So it was good timing for me. And luckily, I've been able to be out and open with my disability throughout my career. I started in Boston, worked at the Protection and Advocacy Agency, similar to Disability Rights California there, called the Disability Law Center, and then came to D.C. in 93 to work for Senator Tom Harkin on the U.S. Senate Subcommittee on Disability Policy, and did a bunch of other kind of policy and advocacy and nonprofit leadership roles in D.C., and came back here in 2020. So, you know, I think one thing I just want to note is during my time in DC, I had the chance to work closely with the leaders at the American Council of the Blind, including Melanie Brunson and Eric Bridges and others, and I've always appreciated the collaboration. And, you know, I also worked closely with the American Foundation for the Blind and the National Federation of the Blind, and continued to be in close contact with leaders in DC. You know, you all asked me to talk about my vision for Disability Rights California and for the future of disability policy and policy that affects people who are blind and low vision in California. And, you know, I would say maybe it's my bipolar disorder, but my vision for California right now is optimistic, but also worried. I think there's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot of potential for our state to do better and to become more of a national leader in a lot of areas that affect people with disabilities broadly or affect people who are blind or low vision. But there's also some storm clouds on the horizon that you know, make my optimism a little bit qualified. And I think one of the things I'm hoping you're going to see from Disability Rights California moving forward is a real intentional effort to connect with disability-led organizations across the state and make sure that the voices of people with disabilities are a more central part of the policy development process in Sacramento and across the state. So why am I optimistic looking towards the future? One thing that gives me optimism is we now have a person working directly for the governor who is kind of leading on disability, aging, and Alzheimer's issues. This is a new position that Governor Newsom created after we finished our work on the master plan for aging, I had the pleasure of serving as a member of the stakeholder advisory committee for that plan. And one of the things we recommended was that the governor have somebody in his office who could oversee implementation of the plan across the entire state government, not just from the Department of Aging. So Kim McCoy Wade, who had been the head of the California Department of Aging, got moved over to working directly for the governor on aging and disability and Alzheimer's. And I feel like having her in that role is giving us more access to the governor, more access to the governor's inner circle. And my hope is, especially if Newsom gets reelected in the context of a second term, we're going to see disability issues getting a greater level of attention and being integrated in a better way to priorities that the governor has already set, you know, things like climate change, making sure that people with disabilities are part of those conversations. I heard somebody earlier mention transportation, making sure we're at the table thinking about the future of transportation in California, the future of technology, broadband, telecommunications, you name it. I think Kim is going to help us get to tables that we haven't been historically, and that gives me some hope for the future. I'm also excited about a piece of legislation that Disability Rights California sponsored in this legislative session that lays the foundation for a new civil rights law for people with disabilities in California. We want to work with the state legislature to write a Californians with Disabilities Act that would be kind of a current assertion of what civil rights means for people with all types of disabilities in California. And I think our goal here is to write a law that would become the best law in the country in terms of providing clarity on what is required for civil rights for people with disabilities. And I think a big part of this law will provide clarity around technology accessibility. As the tech industry has such a huge presence in California, trying to get them to understand they need to build in accessibility and universal design on the front end when they release new products, and all these kind of side industries that grow out of the tech sector, like Uber, which is definitely changing transportation, you know, Airbnb, all these different side industries that kind of come out of tech, they all need to do a better job of integrating accessibility and universal design. So my hope is that as we write this new omnibus civil rights law for people with disabilities in California, that the California Council of the Blind will be a major player in helping us to write the provisions of the law that would be a modern approach to ensuring accessibility and full participation for Californians who are part of the blind and low vision community. Another thing that gives me some hope is just what's happening in the tech sector. As I'm sure you all have noticed, there are a number of high profile folks with disabilities that are getting hired into important jobs in technology companies. You know, I think about somebody like K.R. Liu, who's a deaf person who works for Google. But my hope is that what's going to happen over time is the tech sector is going to have more and more people with disabilities internally, and they're going to realize that they need to do culture change in order to get the people that are writing the apps and writing the kind of doing the engineering around their new products to really think much harder about human factors and universal design as they're developing new products. The tech sector is a major employer in California, so just getting them as they grow to have measurable goals around hiring people with all types of disabilities into the tech sector and all types of roles, I think could also help to position California as more of a leader in labor force participation for people with disabilities. I'm also excited about more of a focus in Hollywood, which is another major industry in California, to have content that's produced by people with disabilities and to have roles that are written for people with disabilities to actually be played by people who actually have disabilities. The CODA, the Academy Award win was a historic win in lots of ways, but I think one of the important aspects of that win is that was a movie that Marley Matlin and other leaders in the deaf community helped to make happen. It cast lots of actors who were deaf, and one of the deaf actors won for best actor. So my hope is that kind of authentic content is going to become the new normal in Hollywood. And as we see more and more focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion in Hollywood and other places, disability will be part of that conversation in a way that it has not always been in Hollywood and in the arts. Another thing that gives me hope looking towards the future is opportunities for the state to be more of a leader in employing people with disabilities. Ralph Black, who serves on my board at Disability Rights California, has worked on this issue for a long time. And he pointed out to me that the percentage of state employees with disabilities between 2015 and 2021 actually went down pretty significantly from about 15% to about 10% of the state government. This is a broad definition of disability, similar to the one that we use in the Americans with Disabilities Act. So that trend line is the wrong trend line. And we've been, now that we have Kim in the governor's office, we've been engaging with the governor's office to try to set a goal and try to turn around the trend line. Ana Monsantis, who plays an important role in the budget and in lots of ways for Governor Newsom, had a meeting with a group of us from the disability community and committed to working with us to try to turn around that trend and help the state be more of a model employer for people with disabilities. This would be part of a broader effort in the Newsom administration to make the state reflect the diversity of California. So my hope is, again, in a second term, we're going to see CalHR, the Department of Rehabilitation, and other state agencies kind of stepping up and being more proactive at making sure that there's a pipeline for people with disabilities to come into state government service, that as people acquire disabilities, including blindness, while they're in state government service, that they'll be able to stay and that they'll be able to be promoted and move into leadership roles across the state government. You know, and the last thing I'll say is an opportunity that I see for our state moving forward is we got a lot of younger folks with all kinds of disabilities who reflect the racial and ethnic diversity, the LGBTQIA plus community. And I see them kind of stepping up in different ways. Many of them are involved in social entrepreneur type enterprises and are, you know, kind of helping to bring visibility to our movement, not just in California, but globally. So I think about people like Haben Girma, you know, the deaf-blind attorney who wrote a book and is doing speaking all over the world, kind of putting a face on deaf blindness, a new generation of deaf-blind leaders. I think about Tiffany Yu, who's a social entrepreneur in San Francisco, who started a company called Diversability, and it's very kind of TikTok and Instagram savvy, and so many other folks that I'm seeing across our state who are helping kind of put a fresh face on disability and the disability movement globally. And it's exciting to see so many of those leaders choose to live in California. So now to just give, well, why? So with all that reason to be optimistic, why be cautious? Well, to me, one of the reasons to be cautious is I feel like our state government is kind of mediocre in the outcomes that we're able to produce for people with disabilities. Our labor force participation rates in California are about middle of the road compared to other states. Our high school graduation rates, we're not a national leader in that area for people with disabilities. Housing is incredibly unaffordable in this state, and that has a huge impact on kind of the ability of people with disabilities to acquire wealth in our state. So many things are more expensive in California than they are in other parts of the country. So I think if we really are going to become a leader, California has to really grapple with the fact that we've grown very comfortable as a state with inequality. We have some of the wealthiest people in the world, and we have some of the poorest people in the world living very close to them. The unhoused population, which keeps growing, is a visible sign of the fact that as a state, housing, we've allowed housing to become so unaffordable for so many people. And, you know, the latest plan that the governor put forward to try to address the situation for the unhoused population that he's calling care courts, to me, would actually do harm to the unhoused population. This is a new proposal that's targeting folks with psychosis or schizophrenia. And it's saying that if somebody sees somebody on the street and thinks that they might have psychosis and they need help, they can be referred to a court. The court can take charge of their care and order them into a care plan that they may or may not like. And these are people who have not committed any crimes. There's a lot of things in current law that allow courts to force people to take medication or do things they don't want to do if they've committed a crime or if they're a serious risk to their own health or safety or the health or safety of the people around them. Care court is a dramatic expansion of the tools that the state already has. And we're really worried that it's going to disproportionately impact Black and brown people in California. It's basically putting a court in charge of the brains and bodies of people who are Black and brown, who somebody thinks are schizophrenic or have psychosis. So that whole issue and how that gets played out, it's a huge priority for the governor. It's part of the May revise budget that he announced today. And it's something that Disability Rights California is working with a broad coalition to try to push back on. But we are worried about that. The other thing that I think gives me pause is that our state legislature does not have a lot of people with lived experience with disabilities in the legislature. So I think if we want to see California be a national leader, we need to build a pipeline for people with disabilities to run for office, and we need to see more representation in the state legislature and in the state government at every level. And, you know, I think to the extent that there are groups in California that have helped folks from different underrepresented constituencies run for office, learn how to run political campaigns and have political success, a lot of those groups have not included people with disabilities in that effort. And I think that's an opportunity for us moving forward. If we don't have representation in our state legislature and in the cabinet of the executive branch of the state government, if we don't have representation in city councils, in mayor's offices, in county executive positions, then it's just a miss. I feel like the policy is never going to be as strong as it would be if we were represented in the government. So my hope is that that's something that we're going to address. But right now, we don't have much representation in the government. And the people that do have disabilities in the state legislature, to a large degree, don't feel comfortable being out and open with their disabilities and don't use their disabilities as part of their political identity. So that's something that I'm hoping will change as we move forward. So the last thing I just wanted to touch on, and then I do want to open it up for questions, is the role of Disability Rights California in helping California do better. I think you all know we are the federally funded protection and advocacy agency for people with disabilities in California. We were created in 1978. Our funding is based on the size of our state. So because California is the biggest state in the country, we are the biggest protection and advocacy agency in the country. Right now, we have a $41 million budget, about 330 staff, over 100 attorneys. And we are more than twice the size of the next largest protection and advocacy agency. Disability Rights Texas has a budget of less than $20 million, and they're the next biggest protection and advocacy agency after us. And part of the reason for that is not just our federal grant, but also we have a significant contract from our State Department of Developmental Service, from the State Department of State Hospitals, and from the State Bar. So about half of our funding is federal, and about half of it is either state government or state bar funding. And I mention all this just to say that I feel like Disability Rights California needs to be the best protection advocacy agency in the country and have the most impact because we're the largest and we need to make sure we're getting a good return on the investment of dollars that are coming to us. What I've heard from a lot of leaders in the disability movement in California is that they're aware of Disability Rights California. They're aware that we have some really good lawyers and we do good work, but a lot of people see us as a fortress and they're not sure how to penetrate the fortress. When people come to us for individual help, they don't always get the help that they're looking for. And when they want to partner with us on, you know, systemic issues, they don't always know kind of where to go and how to become part of our agenda. So if you look to the future of Disability Rights California, the board of directors, including, you know, Jeff, Tom, in a leadership role, they really want us to be more connected and more accountable to the authentic leaders of the disability movement in California. And that's a big priority in our strategic. We have a new strategic map for the organization. And it's a big priority for me personally. It's part of the reason they hired me, because I had a track record of working alongside authentic leaders in the disability movement nationally to try to accomplish big things that we all cared about. I also think one of the opportunities that organizations like Disability Rights California have is to build a stronger cross-disability coalition. Doing that well requires us to have the ability to listen to all the voices in the disability movement in California, listen for common issues that bring people together, and recognize that we're not all going to agree on everything, and that's okay. Just a recent example, we were asked to sign on to a coalition letter related to education of children with disabilities in California. And the person who asked us to sign on to it is the former head of special education in California, who I really admire. Her name's Kristen Wright. But one of my attorneys who did the analysis said, you know, there's some stuff in this letter that the deaf community may not agree with in terms of what it means for education of deaf children. So we ran the letter by Sherry Farina, who's on our board, who's one of the most influential leaders in the deaf community in California. She runs NorCal Deaf Services. And she told us she didn't think we should sign the letter, and we didn't. And my hope is that we can go back to Kristen Wright and say, your coalition needs to sit down with the deaf community and work out this part of the letter. And if you're able to do that, then we'll sign it. But I feel like that kind of cross-disability, trying to make sure that some of the voices are not being ignored, or just some of their issues are not being ignored, is part of our job as a cross-disability organization. We've also prioritized intersectional advocacy moving forward. Obviously, we have an incredibly diverse state. When we think about all the issues that affect people with disabilities in California, some of those issues are immigration policy, criminal justice reform, other issues that are not that haven't always been front and center disability issues. But if you pay attention to people with disabilities who are from other marginalized populations, they will tell you that these are very important priority issues. So Disability Rights California is more out there on these issues than we've been historically. And I think you're going to see more of that from us moving forward. And then finally, I think historically, Disability Rights California has relied on our national organization, probably similar to California Council of the Blind, relying on the American Council of the Blind. But we've relied on the National Disability Rights Network to be kind of our voice in Washington and to work with Congress to try to, you know, advocate for an agenda that will be good for people with disabilities in California. The problem that I have with that approach is California has the biggest congressional delegation in the country. We have some of the most powerful members of Congress, including obviously Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy. And I think Disability Rights California can do a better job building relationships with and leveraging our congressional delegation than any national organization would be able to do. So my director of public policy, Eric Harris, like me, has experience working in Washington. I was the disability policy director for Senator Tom Harkin when he was the chair of the U.S. Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Eric has worked for Congresswoman Barbara Lee. He's worked for the Democratic National Committee. So both of us really want to cultivate leaders in the California congressional delegation, especially younger leaders like Senator Padilla, and really turn them into important national champions for people with disabilities. And when they're in their home state of California, we want to connect them with authentic leaders of the disability movement in this state, to connect them with programs that we see as model programs that can help drive federal policy. So that's another area that we're going to have as a priority moving forward. So let me stop there. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you all, and I didn't want to just talk at you. I think we have a good solid 20 minutes for Q&A, and I look forward to your feedback, your ideas, your comments. So Sarah, do I turn it back over to you?
Well, we can turn it over to our audience. And if anybody has any comments or questions, you know, I just have to say, Andy, you know, I've done a lot of work with DRC, especially in the realm of elections and voting with Paul and Carrie and Gabe. And, you know, there's power within numbers and there's power within us. And I love the partnership that we have with DRC and continue to have. So thank you for coming out today.
Well, Sarah, let me just say my voting rights practice group feels the same way about you and the California Council of the Blind. And I do think it's worth noting that Senator Padilla was the Secretary of State before he was appointed to the United States Senate. And we all worked with him on voting accessibility and found him to be a good partner. So that gives me hope that he's going to be a good partner for us in the United States Senate. And I know that we're working together on a bill in the state legislature right now to improve accessibility of voting. So I appreciate you bringing up the voting partnership.
Oh, it's so important. It's one of my favorites, that's for sure. No, definitely near to my heart. And so, Andrea, do we have any hands?
We do. We have one, and I believe it's Roger. Last three numbers, 155.
And it's Roger, and he's going to yell at me because I forgot to do the Orange County thing, but I'm going to do it in between Andy and Joe. I promise, Roger.
There we go.
There you are.
All right.
Okay, very good. I wanted to ask, I believe that Disability Rights California is a member of a gang of organizations. It used to be called advocacy. What is it? Advocacy and something systems?
Yeah, the old name for our national organization was NAPIS, the National Association of Protection and Advocacy Systems.
And then they
changed their name to the National Disability Rights Network, but it's the same group.
Oh, I see. Oh, the whole network changed.
Yeah.
I see. I knew. I was aware that it got started through the Developmental Disabilities Act, I think, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was, they defined those in the Developmental Disabilities Act, the protection and advocacy systems were defined or something?
Yeah, that's right. The network was created in the late 70s in response to Geraldo Rivera's expose of Willem.
Yeah, I was working for a developmental disabilities project when that happened.
Yeah.
We had a group that went around to this country teaching folks about how to make use of federal programs. We called the Federal Programs Information and Assistance Project. I was thinking that just the California one had changed its name, and I have this problem about organizations that are supposed to be, that are defined somehow nationally, and then they change their names, like the area agencies on aging have funny names now, and you can't tell that they're what they really are. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's all I wanted at the moment. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your comment. Although interestingly, Like, I like our new name better than our old name. We used to be called Protection Advocacy Incorporated, but I feel like a lot of people didn't know what we did based on our name. And hopefully with Disability Rights California, at least our name is a little bit clearer in terms of what we do. Sarah, I see some hands in the attendees, and it looks like Vita has their hand up in the panel.
Yeah, I'll just one second. I'm going to pick. Vita, go ahead. Whenever you're ready, Vita, you may unmute.
Okay, I'm unmuted. Hello, thank you so much for your presentation. It's really helped me to learn more about DRC. Is DRC involved in any advocacy efforts with ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft? Because now, not only are they not taking people with guide dogs a good part of the time, now I've had friends that are now just being turned down because they use a cane. Where are we with this effort?
Yeah, so Vita, the short answer is yes. Those are issues that we're working on, we've been working on. But I'm hoping that this Californians with Disabilities Act initiative that we're working on, the legislative initiative, is a chance for us to write a new civil rights law that is crystal clear, not just about what is illegal, because, you know, discriminating against people who have guide dogs or canes would be illegal under current law, but also to build a robust enforcement infrastructure in the state so that when people's rights are violated, there's a place for them to go to address the problem. And right now, as you probably know, our state Department of Fair Employment and Housing and our offices of civil rights across state government are not very robust. When you think about the size of our state and the amount of discrimination that happens across the state, the ability of our state government to actually enforce civil rights laws is pretty limited and pretty weak. So that's something that we want to work on. And obviously it's the discrimination in the ride sharing world is huge. And it's a huge, it's a growing problem as ride share supplants lots of other forms of transportation. So from my perspective, it's something that we should be a leader on in California. And if we can get it right here, hopefully that will have a ripple effect across the country, since the companies are based here, the big ones are based here. And if we can teach them how to do it right here, hopefully they'll do it better, not just across the country, but across the world. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you. I really appreciate all of your efforts.
Laura, I'm sorry, should I go ahead?
Yeah, Laura Hernandez, you said?
Yes, go ahead, Laura. Sorry, I didn't realize that was you. Laura, go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay. Hello. I just want to say thank you so much for this information. And I noticed that you had mentioned wanting to become more involved on like a cross-sectional involvement with other organizations. I myself am a part of several other organizations concerning the undocumented population, Spanish speaking, as well as Native Council for California. And I was wondering, what can I do to get more involved, to participate with the Disability Rights of California? Thank you.
Yeah, Laura, thanks for that question. I'm not seeing a way I can put something in the chat, but Sarah, you have my email address. Can you make sure that Laura and anybody else that wants to get in touch with us has my personal email, and then I can connect Laura to Richard Diaz and meet Sony and some of the attorneys who work for Disability Rights California who are leading our work around immigration rights?
Absolutely. And so if anybody would like Andy's information, you can email me at the convention email, convention.ccb@gmail.com. And I'll get you his information for sure. That's great, Laura. I think that you would make an amazing advocate. I've heard you on a couple of calls, and I love seeing you in action. That's so awesome.
Well, one thing, Laura, that I just want to say, meet Sony, who's part of our youth practice group. She came from one of the most effective statewide immigration rights organizations in California. So she comes with like 18 years of experience as a leader in immigration rights, and we're just grateful to have her on our staff. And then Richard Diaz, who's part of our investigations unit, led our studies of what was happening to people with disabilities in immigration detention centers. One of the things that a protection and advocacy agency has is called our access authority, which basically means wherever people with disabilities are in California, we have a federally protected right to go in and see how they're being treated. So we have the ability to go into detention centers that other organizations don't have the ability to go into. So that's something that Richard was able to use to expose some problematic practices, but that's something that we want to do more of moving forward.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I will definitely give you a message and stay in contact.
Sounds great. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
And next we have last three digits, 844. Please go ahead. You should be unmuted.
I bet you it's Steve.
It is. And thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Sarah. Andy, thank you for a wonderful presentation. Having had the opportunity, indeed, I'll say the privilege, of working with and getting to know a number of your staff in the context of working on behalf of CCB in various impact litigation situations, I'm particularly interested in DYC's role in advocacy through litigation. In that context, I want to bring to your attention two very serious concerns that have emerged in the course of that work. One is, in some ways maybe the simpler one, is the fact that California state agencies in what should be fairly straightforward accessibility litigation situations that shouldn't even need to rise to the level of litigation, tend, in our experience, to drag their feet inordinately, very often, though the result is inevitable and is known and is predictable, but nevertheless drag out cases for years sometimes, which could and should be settled in months or never even have been cases at all. I'm wondering if there's anything systemically that we can do about that. The second problem, which is more perverse, is the fact that most of our community's successes in advocacy through litigation have been through settlement agreements or consent decrees. I call that law by contract. And while obviously it is preferable to do it that way for a number of reasons, not least of which the impossible burdens that taking cases to trial against public or private sector defenders would involve, but because they are time limited in most cases, they expire. And when they expire, if, as is often the case, there isn't the institutional commitment on the part of the erstwhile defendants to continue with accessibility, you get a tremendous amount of slippage. We've noticed this in situation after situation in both the public and private sectors. And I'm wondering, again, broadly speaking, if you have any thoughts of what could be done about that.
Yeah, thank you for that. Steve, remind me of your last name.
Mendelson.
Mendelson, yeah. So you and we know each other. Yeah,
it's good. Yes, it's great to talk to you. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to hear your voice. I also see artist Basin on here, who I got to work with when I was on the Ticket to Work and Work Incentives Advisory Panel for the Fed. So it's good to see some old friends here. But Steve, you know, I feel like the issues that you're raising are symptoms of some of this challenge that I'm experiencing, you know, as somebody coming back to California after 30 years on the East Coast. I think we let our state government get away with behavior that we shouldn't let them get away with. If you think about what happens when a state agency gets sued, they typically have support from their in-house lawyers, and then sometimes the state attorney general's office get involved in protecting them, just like at the federal level, the U.S. Department of Justice is involved in protecting federal agencies when they get sued. But, you know, it's a political decision as much as it is a legal decision how hard you're going to fight a lawsuit, right? I'll give you a recent example. We sued our state Department of Developmental Services because they weren't providing sign language interpreters. They weren't making sure that people who had intellectual and developmental disabilities who were getting services from regional centers had, you know, qualified sign language interpreters and had basic communication access. And this was a problem that we saw happening across the state. We were frustrated that our state DD agency wasn't kind of asserting themselves with the regional centers and saying, this is not an option. This is a federal civil rights requirement. So we sued them, and instead of just sitting down with us and settling the lawsuit, it played out for like 2 years, you know? So I think that's a symptom of what you're saying. And from my perspective, we need an attorney general that is passionate about civil and human rights, including civil rights for people with disabilities. And we need a robust enforcement arm within the attorney general's office that can sit down with the lawyers that are doing defense and make sure that the attorney general has a consistent set of values that they're expressing on behalf of the state. So Steve, you probably know Javier Becerra. One of the last things he did when he was the state attorney general is he created a new disability rights division within the attorney general's office. Yeah. It's pretty small, but I'm hoping that that can be the beginning of changing the culture in that office, which then can help us when we're negotiating with state agencies and they can sit down with us and settle and not drag these things out. And, you know, on the consent decree side, I think that's more complicated. I think you would probably be able to come up with better solutions to that than I would, because I'm not a litigator. But you're right that it's a very important tool that we've been able to use historically. And I do think as the bench continues to be emboldened by the leadership on the Supreme Court, the kinds of leadership we've seen from federal judges on civil rights issues may get weaker over time. And that's very scary to me.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, and belated welcome back to California.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, next we have Jordan. Please go ahead.
Hi. What's the difference between disability rights advocates and Disability Rights of California?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jordan. So there's three groups in California, probably more than three, but there's three big groups in California that start with the word disability rights. Disability Rights California is the federally funded protection and advocacy agency, and we are by far the largest. Disability Rights Education Defense Fund is about as old as we are, but they're a lot smaller. We have 330 staff, they have about 20. And then Disability Rights Advocates is kind of newer. They are very successful litigators, very talented. Their leader is a blind woman named Kathy Martinez, who's not a lawyer, but they're not federally funded. They're basically a boutique civil rights law firm that brings in a lot of money through attorney's fees, and they're able to fund a lot of what they do through their success in litigation.
Right, we had someone from their firm on today at 10 o'clock.
Well, and they do great work, and we collaborate with them in a lot of our litigation. So California, you know, I think we have some of the best disability civil rights litigators in the country, and they know each other and collaborate on a lot of cases. And we're grateful for the leadership of Disability Rights Advocates and the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund.
Oh, yes.
Teamwork makes a dream work, that's for sure.
Sir, this is Gabe. I'd like to jump in for a second and
just say
please, Andy,
do,
thank
Mr.
you for
President.
Thank you. Andy, thank you so much for being here and for this presentation. And we have a pretty good history of CCB and ERC working together. So definitely want to be able to continue that long into the future. And glad you're able to be here this afternoon to present to us. And yeah, I know I've been on calls with folks both from your organization and from DRA at the same point. So we definitely all work together, and CCB is lucky enough to have good partnerships and good relationships with all of those organizations that you mentioned. But for sure wanted to just say thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Gabe. And I'm looking forward to when we can get together in person, having a meal with you. I think Jeff told me you live in Concord or somewhere in Northern California. So
that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully we can get down and have a meal.
That would be nice. I'll get together. We're not all that far apart.
Yeah. And I know Jeff is a big 49ers fan. I don't know if you are.
Yeah, but we'll forgive him for that.
I'm going to go ahead and call on Margie Donovan. So Margie, you should be able to unmute.
Hi, I'm unmuted. Thank you, Andrea. And thank you, Andy. I want to begin with an acknowledgement of DRC in a recent letter to Sacramento Regional Transit. And that letter is in regards to the Connect card, which is called different things in different areas. But this is a, I'm going to say it looks like a credit card, for lack of a better term. And you can load money on it. You can have it auto-loaded on it, a credit card, an account. And every time it drops down to X amount, I'm saying this for our members' purposes, have it reload. And prior to Folsom, where I live, moving over to regional transit, I had mine set up to where, you know, once it dropped to 20, I'd add another 20. And I never ran out of money, whether I'm using light rail or in Folsom at the time, dial a ride. And then regional transit took over Folsom and Elk Grove as well. And suddenly their vehicles don't have the readers on them. And we as people with disabilities can't use it for paratransit. And DRC identified the need and wrote a letter. And as a member of the Mobility Advisory Committee, I've been, well, you all know me, I've been harping this for months with no response. And so I want to acknowledge DRC for seeing that problem and sending that letter. And it's my understanding, and I won't get into anything with you here, but that regional transit and you guys were supposed to have a meeting this week, which I thought was pretty quick for regional transit to move. So I want to thank you guys for identifying that need and addressing that need. And I have all the confidence in the world that my harping for all this time may not have paid off, but this letter certainly is going to be paying off, which I hope will have them listen to more of the MAC members when we holler things like that's not legal. But all that being said, I want to address the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is this. We all know throughout this state, there's very serious issues with paratransit services. We all know that this preceded COVID. We also all know that federal law did not exempt anybody through COVID from providing services as expected that would include paratransit. The reality is a shortage of drivers. So, I guess this is real prevalent. I run a support, co-facilitate a support group for one of our affiliates in the CCB, and it's on Friday mornings. And one of our members just said that she was told it would take her 2 months to get eligible for paratransit. That is totally not legal. And there is so much going on with paratransit, like late rides, keeping people on vehicles longer than what they're legally allowed to.
Margie, we have about 7 minutes, so if
thank you. Thank you. I'm seeing an opportunity here for more advocacy, but I'm also seeing an opportunity here to maybe work with DRC to help co-sponsor possibly a seminar or two. A lot of our members are not aware of their paratransit rights for whatever reason. And I happen to be a strong advocate in this area. And I'm just hoping that maybe over the next year, we can work together to better educate our community members, our CCB members, on what they can legally expect and what they should do if they're not getting this. Do you see, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you see this kind of collaboration in the future, possibly?
Yeah, absolutely. We're happy to do that. As you probably know, we have a civil rights practice group that plays a leadership role for us on transportation. And then we have our Office of Clients' Rights Advocacy, which is focused on people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, which also does, you know, trainings on people's rights to transportation. So we're happy to do that. I'm glad that you had a good experience with our folks on your local issue in Folsom. But I would also say this Californians with Disabilities Act is a chance for us to educate the state legislature on what's not working in civil rights. And this is an example. We have strong federal requirements that aren't being complied with. So I would also view that legislative effort as an opportunity to get more resources going into paratransit so that some of these problems that you're describing don't happen.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you, Margie. And stick around. Ron's going to be here in a little bit talking about paratransit as well, our favorite subject, I'm telling you. So I'm wondering maybe we're not going to take any more questions, but maybe Andy, you have some final thoughts for us?
Oh, you don't want to take a question from my friend Artis, who's got her hand up?
Oh, since it's Artis, I'll do it.
Okay. I just wanted to ask if you've done anything with my chart, because I know that's a real pain to use. And a lot of times doctors communicate using my chart. And
you're talking about improving the accessibility of that.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's an example of something that's more and more important over time that should have had accessibility baked in on the front end, and it didn't. So, yes, it's on our radar screen. It's something that we're working on. But again, I think there's an opportunity for us to work together on it. And if you all have suggestions, either, you know, including this as part of our omnibus civil rights bill, or just meeting with the right people in the kind of the health sector to try to get the improvement on the private sector side, you know, and we're open to all of the above.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, and we do have a good artist, as you probably know, we have a good relationship with Secretary Galley. So this is also something we might want to meet with Secretary Galley about and see if our State Department of Health and Human Services could show some leadership on this issue.
Good, good.
All so right. Just going back, Sarah, to closing comments, I mean, I hope that you all invite me back, and I look forward to growing this relationship over time. I look forward to being with you in person when it's safe for all of us to do that. And, you know, I just encourage you all, I'm on social media, so if you can't spell my last name and are trying to find me, the easiest way to find me is on Twitter. I'm at AndyDRC on Twitter. But I really welcome your feedback, your ideas, and your collaboration. And I hope you know I'm really grateful for Jeff Tom's leadership on our board, you know, his long-term leadership in the disability movement nationally and in California. And I feel like I'm here in my job in part because of Jeff. So I hope you guys, if you like what I'm doing, take credit for it. And if you don't, you can blame Jeff.
We like him. Okay, we'll keep him around. But it really, thank you so much, Andy, and you know, on behalf of all of CCB, we really look forward to this continued partnership. And yes, one day when we can all be in person together and shake hands, right? One day, right?
Sounds good.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very, very much, everybody. Give your virtual round of applause. Yay! All right. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So before we move on, I have to do something that I forgot to do at the top of the hour for my good friend, Roger Peterson. I want to take a minute to talk about our folks who live in Orange County. And, you know, just want to say that we have you in our thoughts as there's fires going on down there. If anybody's being affected by the fires, please, you know, reach out to CCB, and we can maybe connect you with folks that can help you in any way. And, you know, during the weekend, if you email the convention.ccb@gmail.com, I will do my best to try to connect you with resources in any way possible. It's part of my day job, what I do. So I just wanted to throw that out in the universe, and hopefully, you know, we're throwing out some good vibes to folks. And with that being said, before we bring Joe on, Lisa, are you around for a door prize?
I'm here.
All right.
So we're doing $25 Amazon gift card. And it was gifted by CCB. And let's spin the wheel. And the winner is Leslie Tom. Congratulations, woo-hoo! Leslie.
I know her too. Congratulations, Leslie. All right. Thank you, Lisa. You make such a good Vanna. Maybe we should call you Lisa Vanna when you're doing that.
Ah, she's a good Vanna. Sarah, I just want to mention really quick, we're getting quite a bit of smoke over here. It's not affecting us directly, but we're certainly getting smoke.
Well, so, stay safe. And it's a good thing we all have all this PPE, right? You can put on a mask.
Yep, absolutely.
Could be helpful for sure, for sure. All right.